Hi, I'm Maggie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Everybody can hear me? We're good? Okay. I worry about that sometimes. Couple of precursors. My sobriety date is December 31st, 2007, which means I'm coming up on 6 years. Secondly, I feel like I need to address this sweater. I just came from my company's Christmas party, where I did not drink, which was a very exciting step for me. Thank you, Gabriel. I've heard a lot of horror stories about the drinking that happens at Christmas parties, and I can assure you that if I were still drinking, I would be fired right now, because I cannot drink safely. I'm an alcoholic. You know, this story, I was thinking about it on the way here. It's like, all dressed up, I have somewhere to go, and I just do not want to. I'm a very antisocial person, or I was. I grew up, and I also want to say, I'm going to tell my story. If you don't relate, that's totally fine. Won't be offended. We all have our own stories. I grew up in California. I had a white picket fence household. My parents were very happy together. I have an older brother who's a normie, and never really liked people very much. I want them to be around me, but I don't want to be around them. Like, I would like everybody to come to me and so I can feel like I'm being social, but I don't want to actually have to talk to anybody because that makes me nervous. And as you can imagine, I'm very nervous right now. I was 16 when I started drinking, and it was because I'm an alcoholic, but my parents went through a really ugly divorce. And like I said, they were very happy together. And all of a sudden, the rug was pulled out. My dad was cheating on my mom for like an extended period of time. And we got told all at once. And all of a sudden, my nice household that was all I ever knew, my parents, when I was a kid, would just assure me, like, divorce is never a possibility. Never, never, never. And I know there's a lot worse things that can happen to a kid than divorce. I know that. But this fucked me up. Like, my dad moved out, he started seeing the other woman full-time. They're actually married. She's a really nice lady. I really like her now. At the time, she was a terrible bitch, though, and she broke up my family. And my mom started drinking heavily. She probably always had the alcoholic gene, but it was when it hit her. So, like I said, I didn't want to hang out with people a lot, but what I did do was watch a lot of television. I watch a ton of TV. And I knew what my role was in this situation from watching it on TV, is that now is the time for me to act out. You know, I've gotten all this trust with my parents. They know I'm a good kid. I didn't get good grades. I wasn't like a smart person. I like skidded by with C's because I always envied the people that were like, oh, I didn't study, and then they get an A. And I'm like, I can be that person. And then I don't study, and I'm like, how did I get this D, you guys? That's really weird because I'm not fucking smart. Like, I don't know stuff off the bat. I have to work for things. I have to work to be intelligent. And I really didn't want to. And so when my parents got divorced, my mom started drinking heavily. And I was like, all right, fuck you. If you're going to drink, I'm going to drink. And I started just not coming home because I didn't want to be there. My house had become this really awful place where, you know, my dad wasn't there anymore. My brother had gone to college. My mom was like on and off in AA, started this guy 13th stepped her, and I was like, I don't want to see that dude. And so I'd go out. I think I started smoking pot before I drank. And I would go out. I would be really paranoid. I wasn't a good pot smoker. I know some people like really like it and they get the giggles. I would just be like, holy fuck, the cops are here. Like, we have to go. And there would be, like, not even headlights. Like, it would just be me, you know? And so I would go out on a school night, and I'd come home, and I'd see, like, my mom's boyfriend's car parked in the driveway, and I'd just, like, drive my car up the street because I wouldn't want to go in, and I'd call and say, like, hey, I'm coming home. And then I'd watch as the car would, like, you know, pull out and leave my house, and I'd go back home again. And that went on for a while, you know. I found alcohol. Like I said, I think 16 for a lot of us in this room is pretty late. That's a late bloomer alcoholic. And I realized as soon as I started drinking that I liked that a lot better than weed, because it was like the opposite feeling. You know, when you smoke, at least for me, I got paranoid, I got skittish. And drinking was just like, oh man, everybody loves me. I'm awesome. I'm so awesome. And I'm going to throw up on the side of this car and nobody's going to care. And that's also not what happened. I have vivid memories of cleaning up my own vomit off the side of my best friend's car, like on the inside and the outside, because I drank a whole bottle of wine in like a half an hour or something. And then we were supposed to go to this fake party that my friend was shooting for a movie. And I just went into the car and slept instead and threw up all down the side of it. She dropped me off at my car, and then I drove home in a blackout, which is the kind of cool friends that I used to have. Is like, they're like, oh, you threw up down the side of my car? You're cool to drive. Cool. All right. And that was the first time I ever got grounded, and I remember the feeling being great because I didn't have to go outside. And I had a legitimate excuse to stay home and watch TV and not talk to anybody and just be like, oh, I'm such a badass that, you know, I got grounded. I have to stay here. Sorry, guys. And it was awesome. I stayed home and didn't do anything for a week. And I didn't feel bad about it because I like being alone. I went to college at a party school in San Diego. And that's when my drinking really took off. I think for a lot of people it does. I realized that there were no boundaries and no limitations and nobody was around. And when I put one drink into my body, it's that phenomenon of craving, you know, I can't stop. I joined a sorority, which was a really weird choice on my part. I'm not really a sorority person, but everybody was doing it, so I don't want to be weird. So I did it too. And I fell off a lot of party buses. I was generally the one who got kicked out. And, like, I went to a lot of, they call them, like, socials or something. I went to a lot of them. I don't remember any of them. Like, just none of them. Because I'm, like, a heavy-duty blackout drinker. And in the beginning, it would be short periods of time. I'd start drinking, and I'd blackout, you know, around 2, and then I'd go to bed at 3 or something. And then as my drinking progressed, it was, I would have 2 beers and I was blacked out and I'd be up for 5 or 6 more hours and I would have no idea what happened. And I got really like good at this practice of being an alcoholic drinker when I was a freshman. I had a routine down, which is that I would want to drink. I'd like prepare myself. I'd set up my dorm in a way that I like made my bed really nice and I pulled down the sheets and I put my pajamas on the bed so I wouldn't have to find them later. I put orange juice in the refrigerator because I knew that I'd wake up dehydrated and really thirsty. And then I'd put 2 Advils on top of the mini fridge so I could just reach over like this and just kind of like fumble and grab them. And then like with a bottle of water next to them because my life was catered around drinking. My life wasn't about anything else. I remember thinking that the ideal situation would be for me to, like, if you guys have seen the movie Garden State and that guy invents the non-stick Velcro and he has that huge mansion, I'm like, that's going to be me, you know? I'm going to invent some weird thing. I'm going to have a mansion and then I'm going to have, like, all this booze. I'm going to have no furniture, just this big house, and I'll have people over and we're going to have fires and stuff and it's going to be awesome. And like, I can't invent anything. I'm not, like, an inventor. I just really wanted to not have to worry about anything except for drinking. I just wanted booze all the time, and I was selfish about it, you know? I'd hide it from people. I would be the one that would say, let's get drunk tonight, and people would be like, okay. And I'd do everything I could to make sure that we had the alcohol. And if we didn't get it, I would be fucking mad. And everyone else is like, whatever, let's go see a movie. And I'm like, fuck you! What, do you want to go see a movie now? I don't want to see a movie with you. And towards the end, after my freshman year, I quit the sorority because it was interfering with my drinking. This is what a good adult I am. I had, like, committed to this sorority. I was in it. And I came back for summer rush or whatever. And they have these big, long meetings about, like, how to put together these cheers and stuff. And I was sitting there, and I'm a selfish alcoholic, and I'm really bad with names. And I'm in a room full of these people who I've known for, like, 9 months to a year. They all know my name because I'm an alcoholic mess, and I get sent home from every event. And the girl who's running this thing is like, all right, we're going to start this off with a name game. So It's like it's this room. There's probably like 70 girls in it, and the way the game is played is like, Gabe would be like, "I'm Gabriel," and I'd be like, "I'm Maggie," and this is Gabriel, and the next person would be like, "I'm Sally," and this is Maggie, and that's Gabriel, and I had no idea what anybody's name was, and I was towards the end of the fucking room, and I was like, "They're gonna know. I don't know their names," and so I just turned to the girl next to me, and I was like, "I think I have to move my car," and she was like, "What?" And I'm like, "I think I'm illegally parked. I have to go." And I left, and I never went back. And I emailed them and was like, "Sorry, I have to quit. I'm like, this just isn't for me." And so, and I had to write them an amends. When I got sober, I wrote them an amends. I was like, "I was a bad person when I was in that sorority, and I apologize." But that's how little responsibility that I held, and how little respect I had for other people. And I don't even want to fucking learn your name. I'm not even going to take the time to fucking learn your name. Just show me where the alcohol is. And I was living, my sophomore year, I was living in a house with five of my good friends. And it was like this janky mini dorm house. And we'd have parties. There'd be beer in the backyard. And I'd be the person like in the morning drinking everybody's old beer that was like warm and disgusting. Because it's still good, you know? And It was a shit show. If they weren't alcoholics, they were heavy drinkers. I was an alcoholic, and I got so isolated that I sort of forbid them from going anywhere without me. But like, I didn't want them to go anywhere at all, because all I wanted was to stay at home and drink, and that's it. Because I know what I do when I go out, and that's that I make a mess. I make a mess, and then I have to pick up the pieces the next day. And I had developed a routine where in the morning, I'd kind of like try to put together what happened, but then I'd wake up before anybody else in the house got up, and I'd go to the movies, and I would sit there all day. I'd see like 10:30 show and a noon show and a 2 o'clock show and a 4:30 show, and then maybe I'd go home and maybe I'd just drive around because I couldn't face them after whatever I'd done. And the thing is I hadn't really done anything bad. I wasn't like braless on top of the table or anything. I was just like sitting there talking to people. But the idea that I'd been up for so long and I had no idea what I had said or what had happened freaked me out. I'm very tightly wound, and the idea that people would see me in a state and I wouldn't know what had happened was like my worst nightmare, and I kept doing it to myself. I just kept doing it over and over and over again, because alcohol was the only thing that made me feel better. It was the only thing that made my anxiety go away. It was the only thing that made me feel a part of. It was the only thing that I wanted anything to do with. You know, we started brainstorming ideas, like what to do when we're not drinking. We'd go to a movie. Well, we'd have to be drunk for that. We'd go to a baseball game. Well, we'd have to sneak in beers, and you know, they don't really let you do that. We'd go to a concert. Oh, we definitely have to be drunk for that. There is just no activity out there that I wanted to do that wasn't drinking. And so what finally happened is it was winter break. I was here. I was in New York on vacation with my family, and I was with my mother and my brother's friend and my best friend. We were staying at this nice swanky hotel, and this is after I'd been to the drunk tank, after all the countless nights of blacking out, whatever. This was the final straw. So the first night, I let my best friend drink, and by that, I mean I didn't black out, which was awesome. And No, I did get pretty drunk the first night. So the second night, I was like, all right, you took care of me last night while I was eating that McDonald's burger that we found on the ground. I will take care of you tonight. So my mom, who God knows why, I think she was like kind of pushing me towards AA, had bought us a bottle of vodka. And so we were pouring it into a water bottle. We each took a chug before we left the hotel, and we were going to some like over 19 club in Brooklyn. Like, meanwhile, I was from California. I have no idea where I was, where I was going, anything. And I just remember being in the cab and looking at the water bottle full of vodka and looking at her and realizing that I had told her she could have it and just thinking, no, I'm not going to go through this whole night without drinking. Like, no. And so I just chugged the whole thing. That's a natural response, right? And We get to the club. The last thing I remember is going to the bar and telling the bartender I wanted two cranberry juices. And he was like, no vodka? And I was like, sure, vodka. You're going to give me vodka? Awesome. And that was it. So the next day, I wake up with, like, faint memories of being in the hospital. And I hear my mom on the phone canceling a trip I'd made to go back to my best friend's hometown, like, right after the New York trip. And I know I fucked up. And I just started sobbing. And I was like, what happened? And what happened was, this couple found me wandering the street like half a mile from the club I was at holding a stop sign and asked me my name, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't know where I was staying. I didn't know anything. And so they called 911, and then 911, like, the cops came, called an ambulance. Ambulance took me to Bellevue, and which is like a hospital I live like right near now, and I'm just like, hey. But that was a mess. I mean, anything could have happened to me that night. And that was just one of countless nights where anything could have happened to me because I had no regard for my own body. Whatever, you know? I drink. Something bad could happen. Something bad didn't happen. And I am so grateful that it didn't. So the next day, my mom goes, do you want to go to an AA meeting? And I said, no. I knew I had to stop drinking. That was the point at which I knew I had to stop drinking, but I really didn't want to ask for help. I did not. You know, I saw what AA did for her, which was, like, great things. And I was like, I don't want those. I don't want your friends. I don't want your lifestyle. I don't want to have to start saying prayers. And so the next day, I let her convince me to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and it was in this church. I stood somewhere in Midtown, and it was the weirdest meeting. It was, like, three people talking about wine, and I was like, I'm out of here. But something in that meeting clicked, and I knew that I wasn't just somebody with a drinking problem. I was an alcoholic. And I kind of hadn't, I knew before, but I was like, I'm going to wait until I'm out of college. And if it's still an issue, if I still drink like this and I still black out like this, I will stop. And it became very clear to me that day that if I didn't stop now, I was going to die. There's just no chance for me. I'm an alcoholic. And so I started crying in the cab on the way to lunch, and I was just like, I have to change. And my mom was like, okay, we'll go back to the hotel. We'll get you another set of clothes. And I was like, no, I have to change. And she was like, oh, God. And she hugged me, and it was horrible and all that. And so I was still kind of like, fuck AA. I don't really want to do that. And it took, like, a week of me just living inside my own head and being like, I can do this on my own. I can do this on my own. I can do this on my own. I don't need help, until I let her convince me to go to a young people's meeting in California. And I remember looking around the room and getting really resentful because all of these people who were younger than me were there, and they were sober. And they were sober for, like, a long time. And when you're 19, a long time is, like, 6 months. And I was like, like, someone was speaking at the front of the room. She was, like, the chairperson, and she was, like, 16 years old. And I was like, fuck you. You're an alcoholic. You're 16. Fine. I can be sober, too. And I, like, got sober out of spite in the beginning. I was just like, she can do it. I can do it. And I just remember driving home from that meeting happy, knowing that, like, I'd found a – I related to everything in that meeting. I related to everything people said. And I was like, maybe I don't have to do it alone, you know? Maybe I don't have to be that person that goes it alone, white knuckles it. And so I went down to San Diego because winter break was up, and I was driving down, and I had, like, some girls' numbers in the program, and my roommates were calling me going, we got a keg, like, we got all this booze, can't wait till you get here. And I was like, fuck. And I didn't know what to do, so I looked up a meeting. I drove from my house in the Bay Area down to San Diego, and before I went to my house, I went to a meeting that was, like, 10 blocks away. It was a young people's meeting. It became my home group. I found my sponsor there that night, and I raised my hand at, like, everything. They were like, who's new? I was like, me. They were like, who hasn't been to this meeting? Me. Who is under 90? Me. I need your help. And I raised my hand at the end, and I said, I need help. I just got down here. I'm, like, 11 days. Thank you. I'm 11 days sober. I need some help. And they took me out to coffee that night, and I haven't had a drink since then. I know relapse is a part of a lot of people's stories, and that's totally fine. It's not a part of mine. I'm really, really grateful. It doesn't have to be. And I started working the steps, and at first, the God stuff, I was like, oh, I don't really want to do that. I was raised Catholic, and I didn't have anything against it. I was just like, I don't really want it, you know? I don't need it. And then I thought about my drinking, and I was like, but I don't want that either. So I'll do what I have to. And I did. I shared stuff with this person that I barely knew, like really personal things. And people knew bits and pieces of my life, but they didn't know everything. And this person, my sponsor, I told everything. And that was such a weight off my shoulders, man, to have her, like, not even really care. I mean, it wasn't even make a dent in her day. She was, like, doing laundry and stuff. And I made it through the steps. I think it took me, like, 3 months. The hardest thing to me is just asking for help and offering help to other people. Like, when I got a couple steps in, my sponsor was like, you can start talking to newcomers now. And I was like, no. I'm still the newcomer. And in California, they have you, I think they have you raise your hand until you have 90 days or something. And I really liked it because it let people know that I was new. I like kind of evolved to this point where like I wanted people to like want to talk to me. So I was like, I'm new, come talk to me. And then when I hit 90 days, I'm like, how are they going to know that I need help? And then it became my turn to talk to people. And I got some sponsees, and that was a weird experience. Because what do people have to learn from me? I'm just a drunk. And, you know, we're all just drunks. And the meditation, I would say, is probably the hardest thing for me because when I first came into the program, I thought of, like, Buddha and all that. And being raised Catholic, I was like, I'm just not going to do that part. And I started living with this girl who was sober, too, I thought. And I remember we decided to get up early one morning and do meditation, and I'm just sort of sitting there, and I don't know what I'm doing. And I look over, and she's got, like, lotus pose, like, really hardcore where she twists the legs around, like, only, like, 2% of people can do or something. And I was like, she's meditating so hard. I'm never going to be able to do that. And then I found out she was drinking, like, the whole time I was living with her. And so, I mean, the moral of that story is, like, it doesn't matter what it looks like. You know, the way you practice your AA program or your meditation, your prayer, whatever the fuck, it doesn't matter what it looks like as long as you're trying to do it. You know, I gave that up a long time ago. My meditation doesn't look right. Sometimes it's just me on a subway, like, closing my eyes or looking at a fixed point. Sometimes it's, like, smoking a cigarette or something and just meditating. And, you know, don't worry about how your program looks. And I'm just really grateful that I can go to a holiday party for my company and I don't get drunk and make an ass of myself. And I drink this disgusting healthy juice because it's good for my body. And it's like, I don't care what it tastes like, just with alcohol. I was like, I don't care what this tastes like, but the effect produced is awesome. With alcohol, it was like, I get drunk. I don't care what it tastes like. With this, I'm like, I'm a healthy human being, and it tastes disgusting. And that's okay, because, like, what I'm doing for my body, thank you, what I'm doing for my body and my mind today is good, and it's cleansing. And I just want to say this was the first young people's meeting I ever went to when I was here, and it scared the crap out of me. I've been nauseous all day thinking about this. And I came to this meeting for a long time. I was like a coffee person. I never once raised my hand. So if you're one of those people that's like intimidated to raise your hand or you think people don't want to hear from you, please raise your hand tonight because I want to hear from you. And I want to hear what the people who maybe don't want to talk tonight have to say. So I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really, really grateful to be here. You know, I'm moving back to California on Saturday, and this is kind of a full circle thing for me. So thank you for listening.